You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. We took a little bit of a break because of the All-Star break, but we are back. I am your host, John Kuh, joined by Patrick. I've been gone for a couple weeks, but Patrick, I know you were just on the pod a couple weeks ago with Eric Hinnerton. So shout out to him for filling in. But yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to have you back. Hope you enjoyed the time off. And yeah, been doing well. Enjoying the trade deadline chatter. It's really heating up. I'm hoping my Orioles will be buyers, even though they're a couple games out of the wild card, but they've been playing a little bit more encouraging baseball recently. Fantasy teams have been a little up and down, a little bit of trade deadline acquisitions, trying a buy low on Francisco Lindor that we'll see how it works out. But yeah, I'm doing well. How about you?
Yeah, doing okay. Just got back from 2.5 weeks out in Europe, which timed it perfectly with the first round of my home league playoffs. So that was a little nerve-wracking dealing with the little bit of a time change and trying to figure out if I was going to be able to set up my lineups on time. But yeah, interesting with trade deadline chatter, because it seems like at least the Twins are probably not going to have a fire sale this year. Mostly because there's not really enough people to sell. You know, there's classic Ryan Jeffers rumors, Joe Ryan rumors, but for now, you know, it seems like the team is doing okay enough that some of those rumors are cooling down. But, you know, that being said, we were, I think, 3 games out of the lead in the AL Central last year when they decided to tear everything down. So who knows how the front office is going to deal with the Twins again this year. But, you know, for now, they're doing okay. They reached 500. I think last week or the week before, but now there's still a couple games below that. But yeah, that and fantasy baseball are kind of definitely more interested in how my fantasy teams are doing right now than my actual teams.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows a little bit. At one point, I was like, the Orioles are a lost cause. I was focused on my fantasy teams, and now they're roping me back in. But, you know, that's what being a fan is about. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's we're only halfway through the season, which is kind of crazy to think about. It's, you know, it's mid-July. We still have, you know, at least, what, 2 more months of real baseball. Then, of course, the playoffs are going to start. So I'm sure still a lot is going to happen over the next few weeks, especially with that trade deadline coming up. But, yeah, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball today, cover player performances from the past week, and give some streaming recommendations at the end of the show. But just before we get into all of that, reminder that you can follow our podcast at This Week PL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you listen. Make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Moving into injury news and notes, we're starting out with a couple of catchers. First, Kyle Teal of the Chicago White Sox. He's out for, well, the team is saying it's 6 to 12 weeks. He had a high ankle sprain. There's even some talks that he might not even come back at the end of the season, just could be out in general, leaving. I think Edward Cuero probably is the starter now in Chicago, but it's hard to say whether it's really starter or if it's just going to be kind of a committee with, you know, the catchers that they have on the roster. But yeah, unfortunate for Teal to be out for basically at least a couple months. But your Orioles kind of took a hit in the catcher department as well. Samuel Basayo out with right shoulder inflammation. And right before that, Adley Rutschman out with left wrist inflammation. So, yeah, just some unfortunate injuries happening for the Orioles there. JT Jin going on the 15 DIL with a blister. In his previous start, he had a no-hitter going into the 7th against the Nats. Unfortunately, that did not finish up, but he ended up with a blister from that start. So, unfortunately, after a really great start for him, now he's on the injured list. Bobby Witt Jr. officially placed on the 10-day IL with lower back tightness. He'd been dealing with back spasms kind of earlier this week, but now it's official. He is on the injured list. Jack Flaherty going on the 15-day IL with right flexor inflammation. I believe this is his second visit to the injured list this season. Sure, the Tigers are probably going to be a little bit slower in his recovery. He could be back right now. Trevor McDonald going on the 15-day IL with right elbow strain. He already didn't have a really good season to start out. Had some nice spot starts here and there, but overall, nothing too impressive. But yeah, now he's going on the injured list with elbow strain. Doesn't sound like it's super serious, but still going to keep him out for at least a couple weeks. Max Meyer, unfortunately, going on the injured list with a neck strain. I wouldn't be surprised if the Marlins kind of take some time with his return in this one too, just because, you know, he's coming back from, you know, a major injury as well last year. And so they're probably going to, you know, limit his innings in a way with this injured list stint. And then Miguel Andujar going on the injured list with a fractured right wrist. But yeah, a lot of names going on, a couple significant ones for sure. But overall, you know, some of these guys are, you know, depth guys that are on your roster that will be tough to replace. But, you know, hopefully not, you know, the big names at least that would probably take a hit to put a hit to your fantasy team right now.
Yeah, Rutschman and Basaya going in the IL. Definitely tough timing for the O's with their the Red Sox this week. This in the first series, kind of the biggest series of the season, being without those guys is really tough. And then some of these other ones, kind of the biggest takeaways, I would say, Andujar and Flaherty. There's two kind of clear winners there. Keitar Montero's back in the Tigers rotation and had a great start earlier this week to take advantage of that opportunity. And then Ty France has just been absolutely on fire for the Padres. So a couple guys who are a little bit off the shallow fantasy radar who are now back on it with more opportunity and some really good performances recently. So worth, you know, seeing if they're available in your leagues.
Yeah, it's definitely the part of the season with regards to fantasy where the waiver wire is getting a little bit thin, but injuries are kind of the main way that you start to see some of these other guys, you know, get some more relevance in fantasy because now they've got the playing time, just kind of in those two examples that you mentioned. So, yeah, good to see at least, you know, there's more opportunities for more guys even with these injuries that happen. In terms of some returns from the injured list, Max Fried came back on Wednesday after a lengthy stint on the injured list. 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 hit, no earned runs. So looking really good coming back. Good for Max Fried. J-Ram, he's been back from his hamate injury where he broke that bone in his hand. Has batted second both days in his return. So, you know, no fall off there for him. J-Rod activated from the 7-day concussion IL, so he's back now. Larice Robert Jr., he's activated from the 60-day IL, has started in 2 out of 3 games in center field since his return, so it's good to see at least that the Mets are trusting him with some playing time there. Martin Perez back for Atlanta, 4 innings, 3 strikeouts, 4 walks, 1 hit, and no earned runs in his return. Gleyber Torres back for Detroit. He's played 3 out of 4 games so far, batting at the top of the lineup. I believe when they faced a lefty a couple games ago, he was batting leadoff, and then against righties, he's been batting second. Jameson Taillon back for the Cubs, 4.1 innings, 6 strikeouts, but 2 walks, 5 hits, and 4 earned runs. So not exactly a great start for him in his return. Renell Blanco making his return from Tommy John surgery for the Stros, 4.2 innings, 8 strikeouts. So really good stuff, but unfortunately 3 walks, 2 hits, and 4 earned runs as well. He's going to be kind of an intriguing name, I think, in deeper leagues. But, you know, we'll kind of see how the Stros use him, you know, if he's going to be being limited in his inning, in his innings pitched, or if they're going to be willing to kind of let him go a little bit deeper into games. Byron Buxton also back from the injured list after dealing with some hip issue, has played 3 out of 4 games, batting second in that lineup. And Randy Vasquez back from the injured list, but interestingly for him, not back in the rotation. Instead, he's actually pitched in relief in 2 appearances so far. His first game back, he had a 3-inning hold, and I believe the next game back was pitched about an inning in the middle of the game. So interesting thing for Vasquez, at least. I mean, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had him kind of as a streamer, but right now he's in relief for the Padres. So kind of an interesting situation there.
Yeah, some big time returns here with Fried and J-Ram, J-Rod and Buxton getting back. So definitely good to have those guys back in your lineup. My always favorite streamer, Jameson Taillon, is back, but he is not looking too sharp yet. So going to need to see a little bit more before featuring him in that segment at the end of the show. But yeah, some guys that it's got to feel good to get them back in your lineup. And we could see Ronald Acuna soon, too. I think it's maybe tomorrow, with tomorrow being Friday, but they haven't said for sure. But yeah, a lot of first, second rounders getting back on our active rosters, which is great to see.
Yeah, I know AAA Gwinnett has been having a lot of fun guys come through as they're getting ready to come back to the majors in Atlanta. And I should also mention Munetaka Murakami is also back, but I think he came back like late last week, so I didn't include him in this roundup. But I believe he has yet to hit a homer in his return, so maybe a bit of a slow return from the IL for him, but hopefully he's back to form because he was very fun to watch when he was healthy earlier this season.
Yeah, that White Sox offense is dangerous.
Yeah. In terms of other injury news, kind of a short list here. Clay Holmes and AJ Smith-Shawver, both having AAA rehab starts today. Of course, we're recording this on Thursday. So, you know, they're at least beginning their rehab assignments. Yusei Kikuchi, he's on the cusp of starting his rehab assignment. He had a 34-pitch live BP session, I believe, earlier this week. Nick Lodolo was going to throw a bullpen session on Wednesday, but still no reports yet on how that's going. He is coming back from a blister, I believe. And so they're taking, I think they're taking a little bit more slowly with his return this time around. Just something to monitor for Lodolo if you've got him on your rosters. And then some players that got transferred to the 60 IL more as a procedural sort of move, but Ryan Helsley, Will Smith, and O'Neill Cruz all moving to the 60 IL. So we'll be at least a couple more weeks before we see any of those guys come back. And for some of them, like, especially like Will Smith, right? It, like, the Dodgers are saying he's going to be back. But, it is looking like they're more than willing to wait till the postseason for his return. Dalton Rushing's been fine as his replacement. So, yeah, not a lot of hurry there. Ryan Helsley's kind of the unfortunate one because I think, you know, I dropped a lot of money on him in Fab when he got, you know, preemptively dropped in my TGFBI league, and then he goes on the 50-day IL the week after. So a little bit unfortunate for me, not really reading the tea leaves there. But, yeah, you know, that's what happens sometimes with some of these injured guys.
Yep, Helsley was a tough drop for me in a league, too, where I don't have an IL. And, yeah, Clay Holmes, after my most recent Fab week, I realized that I have him on every single team where I'm allowed to make in-season moves, which I wouldn't say I'm like the biggest Clay Holmes fan in the world. It's more that he was really good before he went down, and he's probably about two rehab starts away from returning, and I think he'll be like a serviceable back-end guy. So not the type of guy I'm just going to plug in as soon as I see he's active. I'm going to want to see what things are looking like on rehab, and he might even get traded, which obviously that will be intriguing too. But yeah, a good, you know, depth arm working his way back.
Yeah. In terms of some other transactional news, J.R. Ritchie and Owen Murphy both optioned to AAA. I believe J.R. Ritchie, that move was in response to Martin Perez getting back from the injury list. But nonetheless, two guys who might be on some deeper league fantasy rosters who were now in AAA. And then Lance McCullers Jr., I believe this was last week, got traded to the Brewers from the Astros. He is now pitching in long relief, so not really getting any starts anymore. So probably not really any sort of value in fantasy at this point. All right, that is going to be it for the injury recap. Moving on to player performances. We did have baseball starting last Thursday, which is nice. But yeah, we're going to start with actually Friday the 17th. So who do we got?
Yeah, so kicking us off on the 17th, Ryan Clark was on our hitter recap with release the Draken for Drake Baldwin, who actually, more on him later, but today's guy is going to be Colson Montgomery, shortstop for the White Sox. He was 2-for-4, the double, 2 runs, 3 RBIs, and a walk. And yeah, the White Sox offense, as I said earlier, has just been fantastic this year, and Montgomery hasn't been the top guy in the offense necessarily, but he's been a solid contributor all season. I mean, really, since he got called up last year. It's a really power-heavy approach. He hits just around 220, OBP just around 300, but he just hits a ton of fly balls, a ton of pulled fly balls with good bat speed, and that helps him tap into a ton of power. He didn't go yard in this one, actually, but he's just been a really consistent power source. I was looking at his career stats. He was promoted just about a year ago this time, and he's got 45 homers and 167 career games, so just a fantastic power hitting start to his career, which is kind of rare too at the shortstop position. But a lot of whiff, batting average, sink, as I said. So are you buying the long-term viability of this approach here, or is it a profile that you might be, you know, shy away from a little bit?
Yeah, I think my challenge with Montgomery is just how streaky he is. Right. You mentioned he is incredibly home run dependent. He actually has 24 on the season, which is kind of nuts. Like it's actually kind of a number that just like leaps out to you. Like you wouldn't have expected him to hit that many homers, but he has. But like you said, it's a really poor average profile, hit batting 220. He's got a 32% strikeout rate. And so you're kind of just dependent on him hitting homers. And he doesn't really hit those. When he hits them, he hits them in bunches. I mean, he had that 4-game home run streak, I think, the same time that Mooney Takaburakami had his home run streak. So that's kind of contributed to a bunch of his homers. But yeah, he'll go like 10 games between homers. And then in between those 10 games, he's going like 0-for-4 or, you know, 1-for-5. Like, you know, stats just that aren't really sustainable. So for me, he feels like a guy who you know, assuming this is who he is, he seems like a really decent player in like roto leagues, but I think in week to week leagues, it's a little bit tougher to trust him because of just how streaky he is.
Yeah, I think you do have to know that you're getting into that when you pick him. In terms of the sustainability of the approach, I do feel like it is believable, and everything about it is believable. The good stuff and the bad stuff, right? The 32% strikeout rate is believable. The 220 average is believable. But the, you know, 35 home run pace, just given how much he lifts the ball and how much he pulls it in the air, is believable too. You know, he's got a 28% pull air rate, which is the same as his career mark, which is, you know, pretty much elite. He hits more fly balls than anybody, so he's going to get to a lot of long balls, but hit a lot of fly balls, you're almost never going to hit for a good average, especially if you strike out a lot. So yeah, I think that this profile it's pretty extreme, but I think it is something that can be successful for him. It is a little bit unique, I would say, at the shortstop position, where we're typically looking a little bit more for average and steals at shortstop, at least in like a roto game where we want category balance. So if you're drafting a guy like Montgomery, you just have to be prepared to make that up elsewhere, because it's a really power heavy, power RBI dominant profile that you're going to be getting at the shortstop position.
Yeah, and when you look at his, you know, underlying, you know, bat at ball stats, right? It's just so clear how much he wants to lift the ball, right? His average launch angle, right? Average is 22.9 degrees, and he's, you know, the pull air rates that he has, like, you know, you mentioned this year, it's 28%. Compare that to the MLB average of 16.8%. It's just clear that all he wants to do is just lift the ball, and he hits it really hard when he does that. So, you know, really good bat speed, really good. His approach to the plate is very much just like very power heavy. Pull the ball if you can. And that works for some guys. And you're just going to also have to take the lumps with it, like you mentioned, right? Just a bad strikeout rate, not great average. That's what you'd have to live with Montgomery. So if you're willing to have that kind of player, even if it's at the shortstop position, you're able to get the average and maybe some steals somewhere else, then I think that's where it makes sense to have him on your fantasy team.
Yeah, I would say like maybe points or like head to head, where I don't care as much about speed. You know, maybe he becomes a little bit more appealing because I don't have to worry about category balance quite as much.
Yeah.
Going to the pitching side, Jay Crumpler was on our SP roundup with Peter. Peter has a sweeper for Peter Lambert, who's been really solid for the Astros. But I'm going to talk about a bigger name here. It's Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins, of course. Maybe not of the Marlins, you know, by this time in a couple weeks. But so right now he's on the Marlins. He was at the Brewers, so a little bit tough matchup here. Did well, though, despite the no decision. Six innings, one earned, three hits, four walks, and seven strikeouts. Only nine whiffs and a 27% CSW on 104 pitches. Nick or Jake noted that the approach from Alcantara right here was still very fastball heavy, kind of his trio, you know, fastball, cutter, sinker, and it was making things work even though none of them had over 60% strikes, which is probably, you know, what fed into the four walks. His changeup was good, 64% strikes, but Jake was a little bit skeptical of the location. And this was a good one from Sandy, but his most recent start, I believe, against the Astros was pretty rough. And he's just really struggled since he came out of the gates really hot. His first three starts of the year were awesome. But since then, it's been a 4.68 ERA, a 1.37 whip, and only an 18% strikeout rate. Obviously, we know the ceiling is high here because Sandy is just such a workhorse. But, you know, all of this is actively hurting you. So are you ready to move on in 12-team and shallower? Or are you just kind of keeping him as, like, the last starter on your roster in those type of formats?
Yeah, it's a little challenging for Sandy because he's had quite a few blow-ups this season, right? Like, just kind of looking at his game log, he's had five games, I believe, or maybe it's six games where he's given up five or more earned runs. And you don't expect to see that from Sandy. The good thing, though, was out of 22 starts, he has 15 quality starts, right? Now, that being said, 15 quality starts, right? That doesn't necessarily mean he has great ratios. As you mentioned, like, it hasn't really looked good once you get past like the really good starts to start the season. But to me, I just don't think I could get myself to drop Sandy because of just how efficient he is. Like, even in like a wins league, he has 10 wins this season. If you have him if you have a quality start league, I think Sandy's got even more value despite the fact that his ratios aren't good. I think the only unfortunate thing is like that strikeout rate is real. I don't think he's going to be really ever a dominant strikeout arm. He already wasn't, but now he's even, you know, less so. You know, the fact that he had seven strikeouts in six innings in this game is actually a little bit of an aberration. So yeah, I think for me, he fits at the end of the bench. You know, you're going to start him still every day, you know, but, you know, he's not your ace anymore. He's not the guy that's carrying your team. And you're going to have to, you know, pair him essentially with guys who have better ratios, unfortunately. So that's where maybe I could see, like, if you have some ratio problems, that Sandy goes to the waiver wire. But for me, I just don't know if I can really, you know, validate sending him to the waiver wire at this point.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, he leads the league in innings pitched by more than 10 innings, which just kind of shows how much of a workhorse he really is. It's a two start next week home against the Phillies at the at the Mets, most likely is what it's looking like. So, like, weekly formats, I think you have to start that. But it might kind of be the last test for me in some shallower leagues. Like, if I had him in an OC, you know, where you lock your lineup every week, I'm starting him in something like that, but it's not, you know, I'm not locking him into my lineup every single week, depending on what my other matchups are and how he's been doing recently. So, yeah, I think quality starts league, easy hold, wins league, maybe a tougher question, but he's kind of like Logan Webb, where he usually gets a decent amount of wins just because of how many innings he pitches. So I think that, yeah, the ratios are, they're a little bit tough, but some of the other stuff that comes with it is, you know, making it at least a difficult decision. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from there.
Yeah, I mean, it is challenging if you just look at a standard 5x5 league, right? Like, he does hurt you in ERA. He doesn't really hurt you in whip as much, but he doesn't get a ton of strikeouts. But I think his strikeout rate, I should say, looks bad because of how many innings he pitches, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think if you are in a straight-up K's league, which, you know, is standard 5x5, it probably isn't as bad. Like, he has 110 on the season, right? Like, his ratios look bad because of how many innings he pitches, but the total number of strikeouts he has is, like, actually, you know, not terrible. So it's going to kind of depend a little bit on your categories and how, you know, some of those stuff, things are calculated, to really determine whether, you know, he's actually a guy who is bringing your team down because of the poor ratios, or is fine because, like, at least he's making it up with quality starts or making it up with some wins here and there.
Yeah, big hit in Caper 9 for sure, which I feel like is maybe becoming a more common format these days.
Yeah. My home league does Caper 9, and it's just like, oh, wow, Sandy is just awful there. But then if you just look at just, like, standard Ks, like, he's in the top 40 in, you know, starting pitchers that in terms of total strikeouts, which is like, yeah, that's not bad.
No, not at all.
All right, well, moving on to Saturday, thanks to Kevin O'Brien for Rumfield Punch. It's the hitter recap article, and we're going to talk about TJ Rumfield, who had a really nice game, 4-for-5 with 1 homer, 1 run, and 4 RBI. He's carved out a little bit of a nice role in Colorado as the starting first baseman. Really good average for him, .297, and decent counting stats, 45 runs, 13 homers, and 52 RBI. I think the most impressive thing for me with Rumfield as a rookie is that he's got a 14.2% strikeout rate, compared to a 10.5% walk rate. So really solid approach at the plate for a young player. And also positive, he doesn't look terrible when he's away from Coors. He's got an 880 OPS in Colorado, but an 834 OPS when playing away. So he's not just a guy who is only startable in Denver. He is startable as well when he's playing, you know, away from the friendly confines of Coors Field. But that being said, he is only first base eligible, right? I think in on ESPN, he might be third base eligible as well. So, you know, that's kind of nice. But, you know, going forward, he's only going to be a first base eligible player. And it is fairly crowded in first base. There's a lot of, you know, decent guys contributing at first base. Even, you know, some smaller names that you might have expected. You know, Casey Schmidt, for example, has got first base eligibility. He's been decent this year. Yandy Diaz has been really solid, right? You don't have these, like, household names that are in your top 10 list. So that's what makes it tough for, I think, TJ Rumfield to really be a viable fantasy guy, just because of how crowded first base is. But, you know, looking at his stats this year, they're not bad. Obviously, the average is the thing that stands out. Is he still really only a guy, though, that you're looking at in 15-teamers? Or is he good enough to be a pickup in 12-teamers right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's good enough to be a pickup in those formats, especially if it's like two out of their next three series are at home and you're trying to stream or something like that. Like, if you have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. just driving you crazy and you want to put him on the bench, like, I wouldn't blame you for going to ride the hot hand with Rumfield if he's got, like, you know, six games in a row coming up at Coors, right? Like, that's just where we are in the season. If you need to move up the standings, you know, you got to make tough decisions like that. So yeah, I feel good about him generally as a, you know, kind of a solid option, you know, contribute everywhere besides steals where he's a zero. I think still much more confident at home, even if the performance gap isn't that big. The counting stats gap is pretty big. Just the Rockies are terrible offensively on the road. And he's got more than double the RBIs at home that he has on the road. So, you know, he's definitely doing better at Coors as a fantasy asset. He has pretty bad bat speed, but he has really good contact skills. So I don't think the power ceiling is super high, but the hit tool seems good. It's kind of reminded me a little bit of like a Liam Hicks type profile. He doesn't have the same like insanely good contact skills that Liam Hicks has, but they're pretty solid, and that's, you know, just allowing him to really spray a bunch of hits all around the field. So yeah, nice season. He does pull the ball in the air a lot to get homers when he can, despite the bad bat speed. So I'm not like, you know, super bullish on him, I would say, like for future seasons, because it is a little bit of a bland profile. But yeah, I feel good about where he's at and, you know, how he might help you out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's kind of like late career Freddie Freeman almost to me, right? Just a guy who hits really well for average, but isn't really that great in the power department. Or maybe ironically, Vlad as well, who just for some reason just doesn't hit homers anymore. It's so frustrating. But yeah, that's kind of a fun one though. That like, yeah, Vlad's, if you've got Vlad, which I do because I love Vlad, but my goodness, he does not play to his potential all that much right now. Yeah, TJ Rumfield at least has double the homers that he's got.
Yeah, Vlad is driving me crazy in a couple spots too. And yeah, the Freeman thing is interesting. Like you look at him side by side and like within one homer of each other, like 10 points of batting average, 5 to 10 runs in RBI. So Freeman obviously has those chip in steals. He's up to a 4 now and Rumfield doesn't have any, but other than that, it is actually pretty similar. So yeah, he's definitely giving you some unexpected production at the position, even if it is really deep.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Jake Crumpler for the Curtis Butta spot start. Talking about, I forget actually who was the guy in this article. It was a guy who was in long relief. I will look that up in a bit. But anyways, we're going to talk about Trevor Rogers, actually, who went up against Houston. No decision, but looked great in this one. 6.1 innings, 1 run, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. Yeah, Rogers, I mean, if you kind of remember last year, this was about the time that he kind of turned it on, and he went on his like that second half run. I mean, he was coming back from injury then. Obviously, he's played the entire season this year. His velocity was a little, not necessarily down, but it was closer to it was closer to 94 than 93, but it wasn't like 94 plus like we've seen in the past couple starts. But really solid Blake Snell blueprint for him. You know, fastballs up, changeups, and sweepers down. And since June, he's pitched to a 1.69 ERA, a 1.04 whip, and a 21% strikeout rate. As we saw last year, right, this Rogers could be the guy that we see for the rest of the season. But he's got a tough matchup coming up against Atlanta tomorrow, Friday. So we'll see how that goes. But regardless of kind of, you know, what we see from that start, Rogers, I think, is only 62% rostered in most leagues, depending on, you know, where you play. He might be available, he might not be available. But assuming he is, is this a guy that you'd be worth picking up if he's available in your leagues? And I think kind of calling back to the guy we just talked about, would you drop Sandy for Trevor Rogers at this point?
That's a tough one, because Rogers definitely has better ratio upside, as we've seen like the last few starts, or I guess like even the last 2 months, but the strikeout upside is not there, and the volume is decent, but obviously not on Sandy's level. I would say probably it looks like Rogers for Atlanta. I'd rather go with the Sandy two-step, but maybe if that, you know, if he struggles a little bit, consider making the swap after that. But yeah, Rogers, his velo has generally been up the last month or two, which is nice to see. And he's really executing well, and just really kind of going out and putting together a ton of quality starts, which has been really big for the Orioles. But yeah, the strikeout, the swing and miss stuff has taken a step back from last year. So the upside in that respect isn't necessarily there right now. But yeah, I covered him a couple weeks ago in my Is It Legit, and felt like generally I think that his improvement recently is legitimate, but I don't think it's like a top 20 SP ceiling like he flashed last year. But he is in a nice rhythm right now, so I think you roll with it.
Yeah, I think he's like just one of those guys where if he's on the hot streak, you definitely pick him up. And, you know, you're kind of comparing him to the last guy on your roster, right? So if somehow Sandy is the last guy on your roster, which I think would be, you know, pretty good roster construction if Sandy's the last guy, right? Then that's where you start looking at matchups, like you mentioned. And yeah, that's where maybe some of that strategy starts coming in on, like, you know, do you like this spot start or that spot start? Or, you know, do you like the next 2 weeks of starts compared to this other player's 2 weeks of starts? And that's where you can start thinking about, you know, interchanging those guys. But, yeah, and I should mention Christian Curtis was the guy that Jay Crumpler was referring to, who had followed up Mason Montgomery. But nonetheless, Trevor Rogers, yeah, interesting guy. He's available in my home league. I'm thinking about maybe picking him up for next week. We'll see how. I haven't looked at his schedule yet, so I'm not sure if it's going to be necessarily a good pickup. But nonetheless, very interesting considering if he could somehow get back to like mid 20%. Strikeout rates for the remainder of the season, like I think that makes him a pretty viable guy in fantasy, but we'll see if he actually gets to that point or not.
Yeah, it's at Detroit next week, which feels pretty solid. And yeah, I think you can use him as like a guy through your streamer spot, and then if someone has a really nice start and you want to hold him, you know, I think Rodgers is worth, you know, considering that if he does really well for you. So on the 19th, Rake Baldwin was Kyle Stanzel's hitter. Roundup, second one in a row for me. There's a shout out to Drake Baldwin. I will be going with him for this one. It was a pretty great game for Drake Baldwin on Sunday. 5 for 5, absolutely torched the Rangers all weekend. It was 5 hits and 6 RBIs in his first 2 games of the series. And then to close out the series, went 5 for 5 with 2 homers, 3 runs, and 2 RBI in an 8-5 win for Atlanta. He became just the 4th Braves player to have a 2-homer game in a 5-hit game this century, and the Braves offense has really been going strong recently and looks like it could be getting even stronger with the return of Acuna, like we said. And Baldwin's been, he had a little bit of a rough like 2 weeks maybe when he came off the IL, but has been fantastic after the All-Star break. And yeah, I think he's inserting himself back into this kind of catcher one conversation for the rest of the year and then next year too. Cal Raleigh has maybe fallen out of it, but we have a really, you know, it's like a quartet of young guys that seem really interesting. Drake Baldwin, Shea Langeliers, Dylan Dingler, and Hunter Goodman. So is one of those sticking out for you as the rest of the season and next year catcher one? I know you've been a big kind of Shea guy in the past. So where are you at now?
Yeah, all of them I think are very viable catcher one guys. And I mean, we should mention Ben Rice, currently catcher one, but he's going to lose catcher eligibility next season. I mean, I love Shea for the fact that he plays in a great park. It looks like his changes last year with dropping his strikeout rate were real. I mean, they're up, you know, he's at 23% this year, but that's a far cry from like the 30% we saw him previously. But Baldwin's been very consistent this entire season. Really like what I'm seeing from him. Dingler's been obviously a really big breakout candidate this year. And Hunter Goodman, I mean, you can't escape the fact that he plays in cores, so he's just mashing homers left and right. But he doesn't have like the best average out of the bunch. So I think if I was going to pick two guys who I like next season, I think I'd actually probably go with Baldwin and Shea. I think Dingler, I don't know if I completely want to believe that this isn't just like a one-off really good year for him. And I think we've seen consistency from Shea, at least in the strikeout department, improving there. And obviously can't escape the fact that he plays for the A's, and that's just a really good part for him. But Baldwin's also been very solid this year. And I think kind of building off what he did last year as well, in terms of the fact that he still has a really good average, right? Batting .275 this year. He's got just as much power as he had last season as well. He had 19 homers last year in the majors. He's at 18 right now, so he's going to clear that number as well. And a really good offense around him, which helps with the counting stats too. So I think if I was going to pick one of those two, you know, out of those 4 guys that you mentioned, I really like Baldwin and Shea to be my kind of catcher ones next year.
I think Dingler, I agree, you know, it's obviously been a great year and he was solid last year, but maybe not as he doesn't have the 2-year track record necessarily that these other 3 guys do. So yeah, I think he's a little bit on the outside looking in. It's also just tough to hit for power consistently in Detroit, I feel like. So yeah, I think Langeliers has such a high floor with that offense and with the home park, like you're saying, especially with the strikeout rate improvement. Yeah, I think Baldwin, just because of the average upside, would maybe be my guy, and then Langeliers and Goodman not far behind. But it is definitely a tight race, it feels like right now. And yeah, Ben Rice, rest of season, that catcher won, but he'll probably, unfortunately, will never have catcher eligibility again unless there's an unexpected development.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing with Goodman, which we should mention, is right, like kind of the same issues you said with Rumfield, right? Like the counting stats for him aren't as great when they're away. I think just pulling up his splits right now. Yeah, he's got, oh, actually it's not that bad. 33 RBI versus 24. He's got 24 RBI at home and 33 away. So that's actually kind of weird. He's actually much better away now that, wait, wow, these stats are really strange for Goodman. He somehow plays better away when he's not at Coors. He has more homers away than he does at home. That's so weird. Okay. Goodman's interesting, I guess. Yeah, I don't know what to make of that for his stats, but I think he's always going to be a guy who is the easy shoe-in for catcher two. But I think his average issues, I wouldn't call them issues, but the fact that he just strikes out a lot is what's going to make him maybe less attractive than, guys like Baldwin and Shea.
Yeah, and I think Goodman, his career splits, he is still a little bit better at home from like an OPS perspective. So it's just, a little bit small sample with this year, but he is a little bit, more consistent home versus road than your typical Rocky, I would say.
Yeah. If you look at his full career, then yeah, that's where the splits kind of make a little bit more sense. But yeah, very, very interesting numbers from Goodman, actually. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, nice to see, a lot of offensive talent at the catcher position. Going to the pitching side, he's a McClaniac on the floor was Nick's SP roundup. I'm going to be talking about not Nolan McClain, though, who's in a real nice run right now, but Hunter Brown, who is struggling and struggled against my Orioles. And this one took the loss. 4 2/3, 4 earned, 3 hits, 6 walks, and 4 strikeouts, 13 whiffs, and a 32% CSW on 92 pitches. The fastball, Nick felt like was not back in this one. The velocity was good, sitting 96.3, but he also struggled to find strikes with his sinker as well as the four seamer. Everything going kind of up and away from lefties, but Nick really did like the curveball. 30% usage, 43% CSW, sitting 84 and 16 to 17 inches of drop. So really nice pitch there, just not having the fastballs to pair it with. And he actually feels like he's going to bench Hunter Brown against the White Sox. Doesn't feel like he's in a good form right now and hasn't really hit the ground running since coming back from his long IL stint. And yeah, Hunter Brown, he's never been one of my, I would say, SP2 type targets this year and last year, but he's been really great ex for the last 2 years, except for a bad stretch early in 2024. So how much concern do you have here? Do you think this is more a blip on the radar? Do you actually, are you worried about what's happening with Hunter Brown right now?
Yeah, I think the thing I'm worried about is just that walk rate, 15.8%, and a lot of that is fueled by the fact that he's just missing a lot with the four seamer. It's got a 40% zone rate, and for a pitch that he throws basically a third of the time, the fact that that's getting to the zone less than half the time, but it's not resulting in any sort of swing strike rates, or swinging strikes, is just like, that's really unfortunate. His sinker a little bit better, but it's also not in the zone as much, and it's not getting a lot of swinging strikes. So, yeah, I just don't love it when, your two main pitches, but which both are fastballs, aren't getting into the zone, and then when they're not in the zone, they're not, earning any sort of whiffs. So, maybe it's a coming back from injury thing, but I really would have expected his command to be a lot better. And just really is not. And it's as a result, right? His strikeouts are also falling compared to last year. So yeah, I'll say it. I'm a little worried. I think the fact that the command is not there is really unfortunate. It's just going to prevent him from being, a legitimate, top 40 pitcher, I think, right now, if he can't fix that.
Yeah, I'm worried too. I mean, of course, I am someone who doesn't really ever draft Hunter Brown, at least not yet. So, maybe I'm a little bit biased at the jump, but he's a career 1.22 WHIP guy, so there is already some WHIP risk there because of the walk rate, and now it's even more elevated with this awful walk rate. He actually has the like he's in the first percentile of our PLV rating. Of course, a lot of that is because he's making a lot of non-competitive pitches that aren't in the zone. But yeah, just seeing that for someone who is kind of widely considered to be an SP2 is definitely concerning. So we'll see if he can get back on track. But yeah, I wouldn't blame anybody out there for benching before they, see some promising growth on his part.
Yeah, and part of the challenge too is he's just so inefficient because he's not throwing pitches in the zone, right? Like, if you look at his game log, like, he's got as many games, basically like 3 or 4 innings as he does games with like 6 innings. Right, through 8 games, he's pitched 40 innings, so he's averaging 5 innings a game. So he's not really able to get wins. He's definitely not getting quality starts right now. Again, you can attribute some of this to injury, but a lot of it you have to attribute to the fact that he's just inefficient because of how many pitches that he's throwing outside of the zone, how many guys he's walking. And so, yeah, it's kind of unfortunate because I liked Hunter Brown as maybe like a top 15 pitching candidate going into the season. I had him on like a dynasty roster that I inherited, and I, you know, basically treated him like a top 10 starting pitcher in that sort of league. And it's just been really unfortunate that he has not really lived up to the hype this season.
Yeah, maybe it'll be the type of thing where it'll be a nice buy low opportunity next year, but we'll see.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Monday, Vaughn but not forgotten from Ryan Amore. Talk about Andrew Vaughn, who's had a pretty decent season this year, actually. But we're going to talk about Trey Turner instead. He went 3-for-5 with a double, 2 homers, 2 runs, and 5 RBI going up against the Dodgers. Impressive stuff here. Hit his first homer off Emmett Sheehan. Hit his second off Alex Vesia, giving him 14 homers on the season. Fully on track to be reaching his 5th 20-homer season, which is a nice little mark for Trey Turner. Unfortunately, this season, the ratios have not been as pristine. A 246 average, 296 OBP, 396 slugging. Of course, this is a guy who we routinely expect to have a, you know, high 200s, low 300s average, and he's not reaching that mark at all. Part of that maybe is the process at the plate. He's got a 96 process, according to our PLV stats. But he is getting stolen bases. He's got 17 on the season. And looking at the Fangraphs player radar, he's currently ranked as the 6th best shortstop, which I think maybe is indicative of maybe how poor shortstop has been this season rather than how good Turner's been playing. But, you know, he does have really good counting stats, even though the average is down. But yeah, for you, where does Turner rank among the league shortstops this year? Do you kind of still see him as like a top 5 talent? Or is this drop off in average kind of indicative of maybe kind of your view of Turner and that he's maybe more of a top 10 guy rather than one of these, you know, elite shortstops that we can trust in day in and day out now?
Yeah, I would say I skew more towards the side of he's more of like a top 10 guy than one of the elite options at the position. You know, the strikeout rate has kind of ballooned this year to, it's not terrible, but for him, it's pretty bad. It's like 22-23%, which is like a 6 percentage point jump over last year. So that's definitely concerning. Obviously, he's still kind of stuffing the stat sheet and all the other categories. He's still really successful on the bases, but not as many opportunities to steal because he's just not getting on base as much. So yeah, I do have some concern there with that. So yeah, I think he's more of kind of a back end of the top 10 shortstop type option than someone who's elite at the position. And obviously shortstop, you know, it is really strong at the top, but yeah, I guess the kind of second tier options have been not quite as strong this year, just looking at the player radar. So yeah, maybe next year the conversation won't be as much about just how strong the shortstop position is, which I feel like has kind of dominated in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, it is impressive that Turner's doing this at 33, but yeah, we're maybe starting to see a tiny bit of a decline, if you want to call it that. Yeah, 22% strikeout rate right now. It's kind of comparable to his first year in Philly. He had a 266 average that season with a 21.7% strikeout rate there. He was getting on base a little bit more, though, that year, 320 OBP, which is why he finished the season with 30 stolen bases. You know, it probably looks like he's going for like a 20-25 season this year. That's maybe what I think he could finish with. But yeah, it's not going to be a 30 stolen base season, unfortunately, for Turner this year, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's honestly very impressive that he scored 69 runs with a 294 OBP. He's pacing for a 100-run season with that low of an OBP. So, yeah, I thought that would be lower because the Phillies' offense has been not quite as good as past years. But I guess if you're hitting ahead of Kyle Schwarber, you know, half the time you get on base, you're going to score because he's just doing so much damage up there.
Yeah, that is a nice thing to have. All right, moving on to pitching. Thanks to Nick for the Braxton grind, talking about back Braxton Ashcraft, who did not have a good start against the Yankees. But instead, we're going to talk about George Kirby, who had a great start. 6 innings, no one runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Kirby was attacking with high four seamers, down and away sweepers, backdoor and inside sinkers to righties. Nick loved his setup this start. And it's been kind of a weird season for Kirby. This is actually his first scoreless start this entire season. Somewhat surprising to me. He has been dealing with whip issues this year. Currently has a 1.32 whip on the season. His hit per nine, maybe that's kind of the one thing to point to. His walk rate stayed the same compared to last year, but his hit per nine has gone up from 8.6 last year to 9.9 this year. So over one hit per nine innings this year, which, you know, is going to hit the whip just a little bit. Strikeout rate, that's probably been a notable decrease for him as well, going from 26% last year to 22% this year. But the nice thing about Kirby is the fact that he is still really consistent, despite the fact that his ratios aren't pristine. He's got 11 quality starts in 18 games started. And so, you know, at least he is still contributing in that manner. But I think the weird thing with Kirby is that it just doesn't feel like he's really an ace anymore. Nick has him ranked as 27th on the list. And just with those ratios, it doesn't really feel like he's a guy who kind of can get back into that top 10, top 15 conversation. But yeah, what's your thought on Kirby? Is he a guy who is still just maybe a really solid SP3 kind of player? Or, you know, could he get back to in that conversation of like SP1, SP2 guys?
Yeah, I think he's performing, you know, as an SP3, and I expect him to be an SP2-3 going forward. But I do think his upside is kind of limited more to SP2 than ace, unless you're, you know, like really punting in your draft and you draft a late SP1. I don't think that the whip struggles are really sustainable. The BABIP is pretty high, even though he does give up a decent amount of hard contact. I don't think that it's going to stay, you know, 340 like it is right now. So, yeah, I think he just kind of reminds me of Joe Ryan a little bit. Two guys have long been my favorite, you know, kind of fantasy pitchers because they usually have great whips. But the ERA is basically, it's just never elite. And I think that does kind of hold them back from being that ace potential. Ryan has a little bit more strikeout upside than Kirby does, which is a point, you know, in his favor. But that is something that ERA does hold them back a little bit. So, yeah, more of a SP2-3 type for me, I would say, right now on Kirby.
And I mean, it really isn't a knock on his skill at all. It's just the fact that, like, you know, he will contribute in all the starting pitcher categories, but maybe not at an elite level as we expect from some other guys, right? Like, he's not going to have a ton of strikeouts, but he gets enough strikeouts, right? Like, his whip isn't great, but it's not going to necessarily hurt your team. ERA is still very solid for Kirby. And again, like I mentioned, he's a guy that you can trust day in, day out, but he's maybe just not, you know, the elite pitcher that maybe we were hoping he was going to be, you know, when he started out in the league. So, yeah, it definitely not necessarily a knock on him. He's still, you know, a top 30 pitcher, I think, in my mind. But, you know, just maybe won't be in that top 10 conversation like we're hoping his growth could have been, especially after, you know, last year's pretty solid showing.
Yeah, and he's got, you know, his away stats for his career is a 3.96 ERA and a 1.21 whip, right? But home is 1.07 whip and a 3.21 ERA. So he's kind of like he's an ace at home, but he's like an SP4 on the road. So, you know, that's someone that when you're drafting a pitcher that high, I think you want to feel confident starting him in every single outing. And, you know, Kirby does struggle from time to time on the road, especially. So you have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
So going to our next day of player performances, which would be the 21st, Simpson Lee and Mazin for Chandler Simpson was Griffey Geis's hitter recap. But I'm going to be talking about someone else who had a great game. That's Brandon Nimmo of the Rangers, who's really been coming on strong lately. He was 4-for-4 in this one with a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Dominant 10-0 win over the White Sox for the Rangers in this one. And Nimmo is perfect at the plate with a homer in the first inning and 3 singles after that to round out his day. And yeah, he's been solid for the Rangers this year, if maybe a little bit disappointing at times. 268, 335, 431 slash line, which is good for a 115 WRC+. And his X stats are actually a lot better than his current production. So yeah, Nimmo is definitely a guy who's been really, really consistent in fantasy kind of over the past even 5 years, I would say. Has he worked his way back into that must roster territory, or is there maybe not quite enough upside here with the profile for you to give him that label?
Yeah, I think, in my mind, just looking at his Statcast numbers, like, this is a guy who should be rostered in pretty much all 12 teamers. like even, you know, even if you have, you know, three decent outfielders, I think he still occupies a pretty good bench spot or could be a good util bat. It's actually surprising that he hasn't hit that many homers. He only has 10 on the season, but if you look at his Statcast numbers, he's got 94th percentile hard hit rate, 79th percentile launch angle sweet spot rate, 81 percentile barrel rate. Like, this is a guy who, based on the batted ball data, is really solid. You know, decent bat speed, a little bit above average, but nothing that you would say like, oh, that's why he's not really, you know, hitting a ton of homers. But yeah, to me, I think he's definitely like in that top 30 outfielder conversation, which kind of puts him in that must roster territory. I mean, he's not going to necessarily be the guy that wins you your league, but I think he's a very solid player that you don't have to worry about starting day in, day out.
Yeah, I think he's actually improved a ton under the hood, which is impressive given his age. You know, he's hitting the ball really hard, like you said. I think that the home park is really just doing a number on him. You know, it's a new environment for Nimmo, right? Going from Citi Field to Texas. Citi Field's not an easy place to hit, but Texas has kind of become almost Seattle 2.0 in terms of how much hitters struggle there. So yeah, his numbers at home are really rough. So yeah, I think that is kind of overshadowing some really nice offensive improvements that Nimmo's made. So yeah, I think I would expect him to continue going on his current pace with maybe a little bit more power uptick. I think that the X stats are going to outpace his production though a little bit just because of the home park. So yeah, he's done a good job like really attacking in the zone when kind of in past years he was a really patient hitter. So he's making some promising adjustments there. And I think he probably deserves a little bit more credit than the line shows. But yeah, I got him as a fifth outfielder in my OC. I was really happy to win him in FAB when someone dropped him. So yeah, I think three outfield formats, maybe he's a bench outfielder, a utility guy. But yeah, I think close to must roster for sure.
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting how much the Rangers Park is depressing his ability. He's got a 137 in WRC plus away and a 91 WRC plus at home. So that's a pretty big disparity between playing games at home versus playing games away. So yeah, that's interesting. I kind of wonder if that kind of puts him in that same conversation that we had about some of those Colorado guys where if he's got, basically, if he's just not playing in Texas, right? Like, this is a guy that you want to start. So, like, in that 12-team conversation where he's, like, that bench bat or that util bat, you know, that's maybe where he comes into more value. Or it's, like, you look at his schedule and he's, you know, got six games just not in Texas, right? Then that's when you start him over, you know, maybe you're an outfielder three.
Yeah, tough matchups at home. Maybe you want to steer clear. On the pitching side, the gossip broke our backs for Nick on his SP roundup with some struggles from Kevin Gausman. But I'm going to be talking about a guy who actually had a really solid game and has had a lot of solid games this year, kind of out of nowhere. That's Justin Robleski of the Dodgers. He was at the Phillies in this one and got the win. 6 1/3, 1 earned, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts, 11 whiffs, 26% CSW on 89 pitches. And the RoboCop, he cleaned up in Philly with a new breaking ball, actually mixing in the sweeper against lefties, but only a 25% strike rate, so clearly still some work to do there. But the fastball and slider work together really well, and he mixes in sinkers, changeups, and curveballs along the way, so super deep arsenal. He was sitting 94, not 95+, which we've seen at times from him this year, but still 7 strikeouts, which is not something that he's done all that often this year. And yeah, Nick feels like Robleski, he was really lucky in April and May, but he's really improved his skills and is kind of outrunning the regression. So it's been a 21% K minus walk rate since May 29th. So that's basically the last 2 months of borderline elite mark for Robleski. So his season long numbers are still pretty nuts and we've kind of been waiting for him to regress, but has he just improved so much from a skills perspective that he's kind of outrun that and just should be kind of a must start for us going forward, at least in wins leagues?
Yeah, I will be honest. I have not really been checking on Robleski a ton. I mean, to me, I think there's always the fear that the Dodgers are just going to, you know, mess with him a little bit. But the fact that he's had 12 quality starts in 16 starts this season is quite impressive to me. The season-long strikeout rate doesn't look great at 19%. But yeah, it's basically kind of, you mentioned he's been really on fire for the last 2 months and the stats show it. So Yeah, I mean, I think you just run with it, right? I don't think there's any reason to not believe what's going on right now is the real Robleski. And even if it does take a little bit of a hit, it seems like he's at least figured something out with this four-seam slider combination to, you know, make it work. I mean, it is kind of weird that the slider doesn't get a ton of whiffs, but the four-seam seems to be still a really, really solid pitch, you know, just consistently gets strikes. And yeah, I think maybe if there's one thing I'd be worried about, it's just that he doesn't really have a whiff pitch. But if that slider can become something a little bit more for him, in being able to, you know, induce those, then, I think, you know, there could be even more growth for him. But yeah, I think right now it's impressive what he's doing. Do I expect some regression? Probably a little bit, but, not so much that, you know, he would be falling off a roster.
Yeah. I think he's done enough to definitely earn his spot in the Dodgers rotation for the rest of the year and maybe even in the playoffs. I know that people are always saying, oh, they have Snell and Glass now, you know, all these guys coming back, but you know, he's outperformed Emmett Sheehan, he's outperformed Roky Sasaki, right? So he's really their SP2 right now. And he is showing that really nice skills growth. Even if he doesn't necessarily have a dominant offering, like you're saying, yeah, it's going to be a guy it's going to be really tough to figure out what the right draft price is for him next year, right? Because, you know, an offseason for him to tinker and keep improving, but also an offseason to kind of disrupt his flow that he's been in. So yeah, it's just been a really kind of impressive out of nowhere season for Robleski.
Yeah, and I mean, the roster context is really important. Like you mentioned, yeah, there's all those names, but Shohei might not pitch for the rest of the season, or at least might wait till the postseason for him to pitch. And you know, Glasnow and Snell, right? Like we've been talking about, hey, they might come back, but you know, they're still on the bench. So, you know, it seems like Robleski's got a really good hold on his spot in the rotation for now. And, you know, had you asked us this question in like May, maybe there'd be a little bit more hesitancy there because he was more of an SP5 there. But like you mentioned, he's essentially kind of their next best guy after Yamamoto at this point. So that roster context is super important too in figuring out whether Robleski is, you know, worth keeping on your roster.
Yeah, and maybe they start babying him a little bit to make sure he's good to go for the playoffs. He's never thrown over like 130 innings in his career. So, you know, if he is going to be kind of their SP3-4 in the playoffs, they're going to have to be careful with him down the stretch. So just keep tabs on that too.
Yeah, and I mean, I would not be surprised if come playoff time he moves into the rotation. Moves into the bullpen, right? Like, you know, that's a very classic Dodgers thing to do. But at least for the regular season, right? Like, they're going to have him start. Maybe he skips a start here and there, or maybe he gets, you know, only gets the four innings. But again, like the fact that he's had, 12 quality starts, I think, in 17. Yeah, or sorry, in 16 games started is, I would not have predicted that at the beginning of the season.
No, definitely not.
All right, moving on to Wednesday. From the Windows to the Waldschmidt is the hitter recap. Title from Ben Solo, and we are going to talk about the title man himself, Ryan Waldschmidt, who hit his first career homer on Wednesday. Went 2-for-4, had a run, obviously, from that homer, and 3 RBI. It was a banner day for the D-backs. They scored 15 runs, and Waldschmidt was obviously responsible for 3 of those. Waldschmidt's kind of been a weird little bit of a conversation this season. I mean, he's basically Arizona's best prospect. He's already been called up once and sent back to the minors. And he was sent back to the minors mainly basically because he just could not hit breaking balls. He was striking out so much on them. But did get called up again. But that strikeout rate, still not pretty, 35%. And it's kind of weird because actually his numbers in the minors are somewhat decent on the strikeout rate. So he's been kind of basically struggling to adjust to major league pitching, I should say. He doesn't have gaudy Statcast numbers. He's got league average exit velocities and swing speeds. But if there's one thing he does well, it's pulling the ball in the air, 24%, right now. But again, all these numbers come with a huge grain of salt because he just has not had as many at bats as some of the other guys in the league. I've got Waldschmidt in TGFBI because of just how deep that league is. I couldn't really bring myself to drop him when he got sent back to the minors. Now he's back up at the majors. Maybe there's something here to be excited about. But assuming he gets consistent playing time, he is kind of batting 8th and 9th in that D-backs lineup. So he's still not going to get a ton of plate appearances. But is there anything that's kind of moving the needle for you for Waldschmidt? Or is this a guy who maybe you're only kind of considering in like deep NL-only leagues?
Yeah, I think I'm still interested in him in shallower formats longer term, but this is kind of seeming like it's going to be an adjustment type season for him. Obviously, being a rookie and having moved through the minors relatively quickly, I do think in a 15-team five outfield, like basically every single everyday outfielder who can at least hit a little bit is rostered, and he probably started. So I think that it makes sense to roster him there, especially if you need speed. I do think he has some long-term power potential, but at this point, he's still kind of working to unlock it at the big league level. So yeah, I think it's more of a one category carrying, and you just hope that the rest of the stuff is at least decent. He's hitting ninth right now, which is a little bit concerning, but you hope that maybe at least against lefties, he can get bumped up in the order a little bit and get, a little bit more volume. But yeah, I think long term, I'm interested in him as kind of a well-rounded fantasy contributor this year. I think it's going to be a little bit more steals focused.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing for Waldschmidt is that if he gets on base, he has Ketel Marte and Corbin Carroll right behind him. So that could work out well for him if he's able to get on base. But the question is, can he? Yeah, that D-backs team is very weird this year. I think mostly because I'm just annoyed about Geraldo Perdomo not producing. But Max Kepler has somehow made his way into a starting spot for them just because of, he's been really good against righties, but yeah, that team's been doing a lot of shuffling around with their roster this season. All right, moving on to pitchers. You Could Find Me in the Bub was the SP Roundup article from Nick. Definitely recommend checking out some of these graphics this week because they were pretty phenomenal. But we're talking about Bubba Chandler here. 6.1 innings, no on runs, two hits, one walk, and five strikeouts. Nick's been pretty much on the Bubba train the entire season. If you've been following the SP Roundup articles, he still thinks that Bubba has top 30 starting pitcher potential, which I think is definitely true. But I think for Nick, he definitely feels like Chandler could hit that top 30 SP ranking even this year. But this one he really liked because he saw some different stuff from the four seamer and the slider. They were both finding strikes. The four seamer was at 99 miles an hour. And it was a little bit more horizontal break on it. And so got 7 out of 39 whiffs. It's basically just getting more whiffs than expected, which is nice to see from that four seamer. And the slider actually increased in velocity up to 92 miles an hour. So it wasn't dropping that much. So kind of acting more like a cutter for him. So yeah, kind of basically two different ish pitches compared to where they've been earlier this season. And basically seeing kind of the improvements there. Gets Nick a little bit excited about what Bubba could do for the rest of the season. But just looking at the season as a whole, he's got a 4.47 ERA, a 1.39 whip. I think the thing I kind of struggle with is that he doesn't really truly have a whiff pitch, right? That slider for the entire season has a 16% swing and strike rate, changeup at 12% swing and strike rate. So those are like okay numbers, but not like really, really solid numbers that you might expect from an SP or a top 30 starting pitcher. But maybe assuming some of these changes that he's made to an arsenal are real, what's your kind of level of optimism for Chandler rest of season?
Yeah, I think the new slider shape, if that's something that sticks, I think that that makes me more optimistic for sure. With someone who's putting too many guys on with three passes, shortening up the shape of that pitch, going from like a little bit more of a traditional slider to more of a hard cutter shape, I think could do some really nice things for him. It is challenging though because that is his biggest whiff pitch. So if it's a little bit more of a cutter than a slider, is that gonna back up on him a little bit? So yeah, I think that generally I do like this change. Hopefully it helps him attack the zone more confidently. He's got a nice two start next week with home against Arizona and then at Cincinnati. The first one definitely a little bit better, but should be a nice two start week. So yeah, I feel good about Bubba, being a starter in most matchups the rest of the year. Maybe not that quite that top 30 upside. But yeah, it's crazy that 99 mile per hour fastball isn't a swing and miss pitch, but it just hasn't, it gets more whiffs than your average fastball, but he's not just blowing the doors off guys, like a Mizorowski or somebody like that. So yeah, a little bit of growing pains here for a really highly touted prospect.
Yeah, I mean, he's really just looking at his game logs. Kind of shout out to the Pitchless pages for showing us this, but the elevated velocity on the slider, he's kind of shown that the last two starts, where it's coming in at 92, 93 miles an hour compared to coming in at 89, 90 miles an hour. But I'm actually kind of surprised that the break on the pitch hasn't changed too much. That might be something to look in a little bit more. But, I mean, again, that the walk rate's probably the biggest issue with him, 12.7%. So, like you said, if he's able to get the pitch a little bit more in the zone because it's acting more like a cutter, and he's able to locate the fastball a little bit better, right, that's just going to only improve his whip and it just improve him going, you know, deeper in the games just because he isn't giving so many free passes.
Yeah, I mean, if he's able to, like, you know, have not much change to the shape of the slider while throwing it a little bit harder, you know, that's good for me, because what I'd be worried about is it loses some drop and it starts, you know, sitting up in the zone and stuff. So yeah, if he's able to keep that shape and just throw it a little bit harder, maybe a little bit better intent, then I think that's a promising development.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for player performance recaps. A lot of interesting stuff happening after the All-Star break. And I'm sure with the trade deadline coming up, some of this stuff is going to be really interesting in terms of, you know, guys going to new places. Does that, you know, help them in terms of pitching in new parks or maybe hitting in new parks? We'll see how that affects the landscape in terms of fantasy. But yeah, that's going to wrap up player performances. We're going to move on to streamers. And yeah, it's been a couple weeks since we last talked about streamers. Obviously, we had the All-Star break. But yeah, how have we done streamer-wise in the last couple weeks?
Yeah, so most recent one to recap was actually, I think, 3 weeks ago. It was one win, two losses, and a push. Seth Lugo was a loss. Shane Drouin was a win with two quality starts and a win in his two starts and good ratios. Reynaldo Lopez was fine, but no wins or quality starts, so he was a push. And then Trevor McDonald had one really good start, but one really bad one that more than canceled it out, so he was a loss. So yeah, 20 wins, 15 losses, and 15 pushes on the year. We're going back to the well with volume this week. A lot of two starts to shout out, kind of a variety of league depth. So first is a couple of young Mets guys, Christian Scott and Zach Thornton. Scott's 31% Yahoo, 54% CBS, and Thornton is 26% Yahoo, 40% CBS. They get two home starts against Atlanta and Miami. Christian Scott looked really good out of the break. His stuff is looking sharp. He's more of a strikeout upsides play. Thornton is kind of a lefty sinker ball or more of a quality starts play. But both of these offenses are decent, but they're just below average against lefties, so that made Thornton a little bit more appealing to me. Next one, more volatile option, but high upside for sure. Tatsuya Imai of the Astros, 35% Yahoo, 47% CBS. He gets two good matchups at the Angels and then home against Texas. This could change. The Astros have been moving around their rotation a lot, and Hayden Wesneski is working his way back, so, you know, definitely double-check the schedule. But in his last five starts, he's had three wins and three quality starts with 34 strikeouts and 23 innings pitched, but also 11 earned runs. So there is some ratio risk there. And then lastly, Brandon Sproat of the Brewers, 17% Yahoo, 39% CBS, two road starts, Giants and Angels. So pretty easy matchups there. This is wins leagues only. Sproat doesn't really work too deep into his outings, but the Brewers are obviously one of the best teams in the league pretty much every year at this point. So yeah, like his opportunity for some cheap wins there, if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, Scott is definitely one of those interesting guys who, like you said, could get a lot of strikeouts if the Mets, you know, somehow are able to get the offense going. You know, maybe that results in a win for him. Obviously, going up against Atlanta is tough, but like you said, sometimes the matchup works out in your favor because they're facing a lefty. And then, yeah, Imai's been, man, he's been a fun, interesting story this year, right? Like, I had him in a couple leagues, I'm pretty sure. Starting out, but you know, he was kind of a drop basically 2 months into the season. But you know, hopefully this run of games is you know, a good thing for him, being able to kind of get back into being a better fantasy level pitcher at least. But yeah, it's also kind of interesting to see what the shuffling that the Astros are doing to the rotation, how that might affect his spot. Obviously, Blanco coming back was kind of a big deal. And then, like you mentioned, Hayden Wesneski coming back, could be, you know, messing with the roster a little bit more. You know, we'll see how that kind of affects scheduling.
Yeah. And, with Imai, he could definitely still be out there because of how bad his early season starts were. The ratios are still ugly. And then Christian Scott, yeah, you might think, it's the Mets, bad win chance, but looks like he's going to face Martin Perez and Tyler Phillips are the two projected opponents for his start. So definitely, you know, some of the weaker arms in those rotations, and they're at home. So hopefully he can offer some strikeout and win upside for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for streamers and for this episode. Again, you can find us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCut. You can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitchless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitchless Discord. Kind of big news that dropped in the Discord just last week. We have just released the Pitchless Pro dashboard. So it's kind of a way that you can use basically the Pitcherlist data that we've got, you know, all these hitter recap articles, SP roundup articles, all the work that we've been doing with PLV and other predictive stats like that. You can kind of bring that into your fantasy leagues. So that's currently an alpha. Obviously, there's still a lot of development going on there, but that is available now for Pitcherlist Pro members. But yeah, if you can do that, you can also join us in the Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. But yeah, that's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John. We'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.